Great. Well, this is Wolfram Alderson, and I am really excited to be here today to be talking with Virginia Warren, who is a lawyer from Australia. I actually don't know where you're from originally, but I'm going to ask you a little bit about your background. But I was also hoping to talk with Tim Williams, who is your partner in crime or love, depending on how we want to how to frame this, but he unfortunately wasn't able to join us today. But I, based on what I've learned from the Lawyers for Love website and your own work, I'm sure you can answer the questions that I have, which are about the project you're working on called Love is of the Essence. But before we get to that, let's offer a couple of brief introductions. I'll just start with myself, just so you know who you're talking to in case you haven't check me out, but I'm a lifetime social change guy and an artist as well. I've been doing social change work for my entire adult life and career and work with a lot of different populations. And after working with so many different issues, whether it was homelessness or hunger and so many different serious social problems, I've come to realize that the fundamental problem underlying these is what I call the love deficit, meaning that the sum total of our suffering on this planet is equal to the love deficit, meaning the lack of love expressed. That we seem to have the technical and, you know, scientific knowledge to solve these problems, but getting enough love together, enough love power, willpower to solve these problems seems to be a fundamental problem. And so I've joined up as a founding member along with Tim to found the Institute for Love and Time with Dr. Julia Mossbridge. And through that work, gotten to know Tim a little bit and heard about this really fascinating project, Love is of the Essence and Lawyers for Love, that you're working on. And so I'm going to stop talking and let you introduce yourself and hopefully share how you arrived at this subject of love and Love is of the Essence and the Lawyers for Love project.
Well, thanks, Wolfram. Thanks for asking us to share with you our project today. Yeah, unfortunately, Tim is unwell and he's sorry he can't be here, but no doubt he'll catch up soon and share his side of the story. But for me, look, I've been through a variety of different journeys into this point, and you know, nothing is wasted and nothing is lost when you're guided where to go. And I ended up getting into legal practice in a roundabout sort of a way, but I won't go into that detail today. So I'm a partner in a law firm on the Mornington Peninsula, which is a beautiful part of the world south of Melbourne, and I was one day I was walking down the main street of Mornington and I actually tripped over in the main street. I was all dressed up in my suit and, you know, looking like very lawyerish, and I fell down and I was really quite embarrassed by that. And I went off to my chiropractor and he prescribed yoga for my bruised ego and knees. And I thought, oh dear, yoga, that'll be like watching paint dry. I couldn't have thought of anything worse to do. Because I was a bit of a Zumba person at the time, you know, I thought everything slow and not fast paced wasn't for me. But most surprisingly, I get into this yoga class and I felt something. My world shifted from that point forward, where I thought, wow, there's something more. And I had this knowing when I was young, but it just then came back to me that there's something much more about our existence. And so I wondered why just a few stretches and breaths and things in yoga made me feel this way. So ultimately, I went off and did a diploma in yoga teaching. And that sent me down the veritable rabbit hole of exploring various philosophies. And I'll say that shamanism is probably my favorite of those. And I'll tell you a little bit about that later, why that is. But discovering then how I could bring that back into legal practice, how I could reconcile yoga and the principles of that they embodied of ahimsa, they call it, which is non-harm, how I could embody that into my yoga practice. And I found that rather difficult. So I started exploring, and I wondered, what on earth do lawyers do when they feel like I felt? And most of them answered, after I explored the world, most of them were moving out of legal practice, and that was really unfortunate to me. So that began my journey. Then I wrote this book called Let's Kiss All the Lawyers, Said Nobody, No One Ever. Gave the title right. Because I found that there was a great deal of depression and suicide within the legal profession. And that took me on that journey to discover why that was, and really discovering what you just said, that there is a love deficit. We do not operate from a place of love because we're trained left-brained. We're only there to use our intellect, but we're dealing with human relationship. And dealing with human relationship means you have emotion. And if you're only using the intellect, you can't connect with emotion at all. So yeah, then I met Tim, and then we really had a common ground of, you know, love is where it's at, because law is unfortunately based in fear, left brain separation, and we're both on the same page there. So we formed Lawyers for Love to infuse a little bit more love into the legal profession, and ultimately to bring a different platform to the world, a different offering.
Well, that's an amazing journey, and I have been on the Lawyers for Love website and your website as well, and I know there's a lot more that to the story that really is interesting. There's the Lawyers for Love website, and then your website again is what?
Yeah, thezenlawyer.com.au. That's my personal website, yeah.
And you've got really interesting content on both of those sites. You know, once I heard, you know, I have to admit, when I first met Tim, I was thrown off because he didn't fit any stereotype I had of a lawyer. and then when he introduced the idea of love is of the essence, which we did adopt into the bylaws and also into policies and practices of the Institute for Love and Time, which is a nonprofit organization. The sentence, the clause, infected me. It started to grow inside of me. It's the only way I can describe it. I'm an artist, so I'm working on a sculptural interpretation of that sentence. It is really, really powerful on many levels. I've been doing organizational work my entire life. I acquired 2 degrees in organization development and leadership. And like you, I found my profession lacking when it came to the subject of love. And it seemed really ironic because both universities where I studied were faith-based universities. One was evangelical and the other was Catholic. And not once during my entire advanced, you know, so-called higher education was the love word brought up. Love was not part of the equation. Love was not part of the curriculum. And here I was in the nonprofit field my entire life, which is really, I think, based on love and charity. And yet so many nonprofits really try to emulate the for-profit world and sort of this transactional business give and take kind of relationship versus you know, some of the higher orders of thinking that are really underlying nonprofit and charitable work. And I did my own investigation once the sentence started to grow inside of me. I just wanted to know more. Of course, I went to your website. I wanted to understand the origin of it. You could perhaps talk a little bit about time is of the essence and sort of the evolution of this clause and where it came from. But I did find one legal reference online because I was looking for love in relationship to the law. And I found this 1932 case. I think it was in the UK of Donahue versus Stevenson. And the legal authority at the time referenced the moral principle of thou shalt love your neighbor. And to make a long story short about this case, they essentially said that, you know, it's your responsibility to love your neighbor. And if you acted in a negligent way, if you didn't, in fact, love your neighbor, and you treated them in a way that caused them harm, then you're at fault. But aside from that 1932 case, I wasn't able to find anything else. I think you have one or two references on the Lawyers for Love website, but I'm just interested if you could just share a little bit, maybe explain what the time is of the essence clause means, and some, because I think many people have probably heard of time is of the essence, if not as a legal phrase, as a sort of a, you know, colloquialism, if you will. But it does have legal meaning in legal documents, and how you've transmuted that to love is of the essence, and how you hope to inject that into the field of law.
Sure. Well, it's very interesting. Because time is of the essence is very much a lawyer phrase, a contractual phrase, and it's very structural, where if you don't perform within a certain period of time, the contract is at an end, and there's all sorts of punishments attached to that. Whereas lawyers understand that phrase, and yes, look, in some situations we say, yeah, well, we need this done by this because it's for the benefit of all. However, there might be certain circumstances where that is not for the benefit of all, despite what the contract says. And when we're infusing love, so let me just go back a little bit, because we've got this rule of law. The rule of law is essentially based in fear. And it came about because we grew up as children in a law-based society. We were operating under our parents' rules. If we didn't do something, you know, that wouldn't be any good, and we wouldn't receive love. So we obeyed the laws, and sometimes to our detriment. So, for example, one I love to use is boys don't cry, a rule in the household. So we have a young child, you know, he's tripped, he's fallen, he's hurt himself. He wants to cry. His natural instinct, it's his response to life. It's a valid response. Yet his parent says, boys don't cry. So effectively what happens is he has to create a rule that really goes against his intuition, his natural emotion. Now this rule will cause him some grief as time goes by, but behind all that is this notion that we always have done this. So we're indoctrinated to create our internal legal system, our internal rules or laws, which tell us how to operate effectively within a society, or when we're young, within a tribe. Now, because we're so young when this happens, we don't know the difference between, we can't rationalize ourselves to say, oh, hang on a minute, I'm allowed to cry, I'm allowed to feel my feelings, and I'm allowed to intuit my life. Instead, we follow the rules. So we go through our lives rule-based, thinking this keeps us safe, we'll be loved, we'll be clothed and fed. So this is the way to live. When we get out into society, we continue along that path because we think that is the right way. We've forgotten intuition. We don't know how to connect to ourselves or our heart any longer. And that's how the rule of law is created. It is a projection of what we've learned as children, and it's perpetuated over time. And I like to fondly say that it's the rules that we've created have effectively, they're now controlling us. And that's what we call legal fetishism, because it is a system now, that it's an energetic system that's controlling us, and it's based in fear. So of course you can't have love without fear. Or sorry, that if there is love, you cannot have any fear present. So the thing we say about love being of the essence is that all the rules are based in fear. We need an alternative. We need to go back to love, where we're making decisions from a love place. So, for example, if you've got time is of the essence and you're in a contract and you're looking at this contract and you're thinking, well, that perhaps doesn't suit everybody, that time was the time that we created, then if love was of the essence, you'd find the most loving thing to do, the loving response. And you would say, because Tim and I have defined love to be the absence of fear, where the decision is made for the highest good of all in each moment. So if you've got something, you've entered into a contract and you've said, you know, in 30 days we will do this or else, and a whole range of things, perhaps like COVID has happened. And then you say, well, if you are coming from a place of lovers of the essence, you would say, okay, well, we are not in a position now to settle this contract or deal with it in a proper way. So the strict rule of law should not apply. And the most loving thing to do, and for the highest good of all in this moment, because we couldn't predict the future. Time is momentary. It's now. It's not sometime in the future. Love is now. And so this is where lovers of the essence is a vital aspect of a shift, a complete shift away from fear-based. It's like, because time is of the essence is very, very fear-based. If you don't do something by a certain time, then we are in all sorts of trouble.
Wow. I mean, it's really powerful to hear that. And for many, including people in the law field of law, I mean, this might sound like something that's really out there.
yeah.
But it's really in here. And I think, you know, part of the shift that's happened in my career is sort of coming out of the love closet and talking about love openly in my organizational work, just like you are in the field of law. And of course, there's some risk involved because your colleagues might think, oh boy, you know, she or he finally went over the edge. And, you know, I think on your website, you even use the expression from the padded cell.
Yes.
And I think that's a great, honest acknowledgement that that love is risky business, and this idea of love being coming from a place without fear is also really profound, because we're even told that, you know, to fear our God. If God is love, how could we fear our God? And so we definitely have received, I think, some very confusing messages in our lifetime, and not just in our lifetime. This is, you know, sort of a human challenge, I think, in really understanding the depth of love. I happen to work with a lot of scientists, and their idea of love is that this is merely a biochemical function to help propagate the species. It's a fantastic biochemical explosion in the brain. You know, it's but essentially a biochemical quirk that enables us to propagate. And that ideas of a greater love above and beyond romantic and sexual love is, you know, gets into the category of metaphysics and religion and philosophy, and they feel much less qualified or even dismiss interpretations beyond that simple, you know, reproductive kind of explanation. And within the field of law, I would imagine that, you know, like I mentioned, I found this one reference of thou shalt love your neighbor being used to as part of the legal authority's way of answering the question of who was right or was wrong. But the field of law has not, at least from what I've found so far, really interpreted love to very much, except perhaps in the fear-based case of divorce settlements, you know, things like that. But just curious, in your work, have you seen other, you know, cases or examples where love has been brought up in the terms of law, or where perhaps it could be brought up? I mean, obviously there's some intention behind this clause. You're putting this clause out there. I believe your vision or mission, if you will, is that this clause might be adopted and inserted into the legal lexicon and case law at some point.
Yes, that's our intention to do that. But to go back to your question about other precedents, no, is the short answer. I like to call it the L word because nobody wants to talk about love. Yes, as you say, no, nobody can define it. So Tim and I have come up with the best idea that we can. I also think love is it's a place of peace and satisfaction. If you're in that state of just being, this is love. Love is a state of being without fear. So you're not looking to fulfill yourself or complete yourself. You are whole and you're satisfied. If you're in a place of love, you are just being there. So you need for nothing else. And I think the Donahue and Stevenson, the snail in the bottle case, where they threw that line in, I think it's really rather amusing because that what they've then tried to do or what then happened is, oh, there's love thy neighbour. Let's then build some rules around it. And so ultimately we're saying, well, you should love me. That's what that's saying. You should love me. So if you're not treating me properly, I'm going to sue you. I'm going to blame you for everything that's wrong with my life. And that is effectively what we do. And that's what the legal system is about. We'll go to a lawyer and we'll try and help them perpetuate blaming somebody else for what's going on. So yeah, they couldn't, I believe it was a nice idea to bring love thy neighbor, but they forgot to add as thyself, which means
right.
You must sit in a place of love for you.
Right.
You must love you first and be in your space of love and satisfaction. When you are there, when you are in that state of being, then you can love your neighbor. Then you can effectively function in this world. Then you can operate on a higher plane. And, you know, effectively, we say you don't need a contract even. If you're in such a good state of being, you just know what's for the highest good of all concerned in each moment. You understand it because there's no fear. You don't have any fear of what's going to happen to me. But that's bringing yourself into alignment, and that's a whole another discussion. But as far as talking about lovers of the essence, bringing that in, yeah, we wanted an alternative view to the rule of law and playing with the words time is of the essence, because that's such a lawyer phrase. We said, you know, love should be of the essence. Love should be of the essence of all decisions we make, because law is about making decisions. It's about relationship and making decisions. Because our whole life is about a choice in every moment. And so if you're making that from a place of love, you're making that for the highest good of all also. So doing that from that place, so we thought putting lovers of the essence into your documents. So while we couldn't bring people to the idea of, oh, there would be no contracts because people just wouldn't hear that, we thought if you put lovers of the essence into a document, people have to turn their minds to the idea that love exists. And even if there was litigation over that, the courts would have to decide what love was. Whilst we've got a definition, we've told you this, it would be so fun for a court to have to sit and really decide what love is and people to talk about it, and it brings it into the consciousness. But more than that, just very simply, Tilt has the Lovers of the Essence Clause in their constitution, and we're so excited for them. And I know how Dr. Mossbridge, she felt so excited about it, because that's what it does. If you infuse love into anything, as Masaru Emoto did with the water experiment, you know, speaking love or putting love words onto water or rice changed the constitution or made it felt better. And that's what happens when you put love as a word into a document. Now, I don't know any documents that have just got love in them for the sake of love being there. And that's what we're aiming to do at Lawyers for Love, is to infuse love surreptitiously, secretly, into everything. You can't come at people saying, oh, just love everything. People don't understand it. They see love as something that hurts you. But they've got the definition wrong. They've got love from a fear-based perspective. And so, yes, that's why we're doing it that way.
Well, I think it's a good strategy. It's a way of like you know, there's even a film, a science fiction film, which talks about the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, which essentially is the idea that love shapes our thoughts, not love, but language shapes our thoughts, and not the other way around, that thoughts shape the language. So it's a debate in the world of language and culture, and so the question is, you know, how powerful is the language in shaping our thinking and our actions? I know in the organizational work that I do, you know, when you're successful with policy and getting laws changed, and then that practice such as, you know, no sexism or no racism or no discrimination, when that becomes part of the culture, then you know you've really won, because we're no longer relying on a specific law or a policy, you know, something written down, but now it's a cultural understanding that everyone respects, everyone participates in, then you know you've made the shift, and it's in the language. And so I have focused on language of love, and I'm completing a book now called Radiate Perpetual Love. And I have essentially, it features 108 reflections or dimensions of love, as if love is a diamond with 108 facets. Because I felt like in order to understand love from a structural point of view, to deepen love within yourself, we need to deepen the language and the understanding and the perspectives, the many aspects of love that actually are out there, but not being assimilated. You use the term aligned. You know, I think we need to bring this information together, and this, your specific strategy of bringing it into the language of the law, I think is, you know, it's really powerful. And I'm going to be adopting the clause into, I'm CEO of the Hypoglycemia Support Foundation. We'll be adopting the clause there. And I hope that we can, you know, actively reach out to different organizations and encourage them to adopt the clause. But the good news is also, and I think this is really important, that Jack Ma, founder of Alibaba and one of the richest people on the planet, has come out of the love closet himself and has been speaking on some very distinguished global stages about the idea of the love quotient, the LQ. You know, we talk about the IQ and the EQ, emotional quotient, but he's brought up the love quotient, and he's talking to world leaders about this. And he's saying, you know, half of his company are women, and that the love quotient apparently, not surprised to you, I'm sure, but seems to be more prevalent amongst the female of the species, at least in his company, that there's actually, so he's making a business case why love is not just a you know, a nice, quaint idea or some biochemical quirk that lives on the fringe of our, you know, our day-to-day work lives, but it's actually fundamental to business success.
Yes, I agree with that. I agree with that primarily because naturally I would, but from the perspective that when you bring love into anything, you have then dropped all your fear. If you brought love into a boardroom, you've dropped all your fear, then the creativity flows. And if everyone's flowing together, brilliant ideas come to pass for the highest good. So it's only good for business.
Yes, I mean, but it's ironic because, as you, I'm sure you are quite aware, business law, corporate law, this idea of there being a legal corpus or a legal body, has essentially left out, if the idea is to create a corporation, you know, we even have this counter resistance movement, corporations are not people. You know, but essentially, as far as the law goes, you know, you when you create a corporation, nonprofit or otherwise, it's a corpus, it's a body, and yet we create these bodies that don't have any hearts.
Yes.
And I say a corpus without a heart is a corpse.
Yes, you're right.
And that's how it feels working in an organization where love is just not even talked about. In fact, if you bring it up, you'll be marginalized as a, you know, I don't know, a new age, a new age preacher.
That's it. Exactly. But the thing is, it all stems back to our childhood. We trust in rules. We trust in the rules because people say if we trust in rules, because the corporations are built around rules. There's no lovers of the essence clause in a corporate constitution. So people think they're rule based, they're fear based. They teach you how to behave. Whereas if you went back to your basic, your core self, and understood your intuition that you had when you were a child, you would intuit what to do next, and you would understand all the people around you. So these corporations, they don't have any love in them because that's just the way it's always been and nobody's questioned it. And people think the rules keep them safe and protect them. Well, that's not true. The rules, there is no certainty in the rules. And as we talk about it, we've got a case on our website, which is called Love and the Commonwealth. And we love that it's Love's case because it's just so ironic. But in that case, we have 7 Australian High Court judges. 3 agreed, 3 said yes, 3 said no, and 1 was undecided in this case. And I won't go into the details of the case, but it just goes to show you how the most brilliant minds in a country cannot agree on what was probably a very reasonably simple question. And that's why, you know, laws and are uncertain because they come from everybody's own perspective, not from their hearts, not from their connection to themselves, not from their own intuition. And yeah, look, this is why we need lovers of the essence in these documents, to say that every corporation should then consider when it's making, because it is a legal person, it's a legal energy, and that energy should, when it makes decisions, should come together, should, I don't like the word should, but sometimes it comes out, because there is no right or wrong, it just is. However, when we've got lovers of the essence, the decisions are based in love. We have to consider love every time we make a decision. And that can only be for the good of all.
Well, I have to say it's music to my ears. Like I said, I spent years in so-called higher education without hearing about love in any structural way. In my work, I found that the writings and speeches of Dr. Martin Luther King, he specifically spoke about and presented on the idea of systemic love, and as opposed to systemic hate and violence and so on. And I don't think it's a coincidence that as he ramped up his sort of the power of love conceptually in his speeches that ultimately led to him being assassinated. This is risky business, even though, the idea is that love is a place without fear. There are many who fear this very subject for the reason that it questions very powerful and long-standing structures in our society and culture, which serve, you know, special interests and powerful corporations, or, you know, white power organizations. The list goes on. And so this could be a very threatening idea. And the idea that you're actually talking about bringing love into the law is threatening, but to certain folks, I think it is not only powerful but threatening to the old system.
The most beautiful thing, Wolfram, though, is that whilst at this present time we have a hierarchy, so we have a power shifting from those at the bottom to those at the top, and it's all about taking somebody else's power. That's what fear is.
Yeah.
So these people that are in fear of love are in fear that their power will be removed from them. However, the opposite is true. When they find love, when they are in love, in complete satisfaction, they are in their most powerful place. They just don't know that. They don't know it yet.
Yes.
The most power you can get is from being in a place of love. You have no need or want for anything.
Yes.
You have no attachment to anything. You have no attachment to being powerful. You can be free. This is what freedom is. This is absolute freedom, freedom of choice, free will. The reason I believe we humans exist is we're here freely to create. You're a creator. You know what that means to you, to be free to create.
Yes.
And that creation only comes from a place of love.
Yes. I mean, I'm also a fan of I mentioned science fiction. I'm writing a longer term project as a science fiction book. But a common theme of science fiction, of course, fear is part of the key narrative of most science fiction movies. And yeah. And I when I actually looked into this, fear as a force or as an energy consumes more than it puts out. It's entropic. It's parasitic. Fear doesn't build. It grinds up. It destroys. It consumes. And yes. So therefore, if you're looking for resources or power, as you're saying, and you want the power to expand, you want the power to grow, you want the power to have more. Well, love is the only force that I've seen that gives out more than it takes. And it doesn't, according to science, we live in an entropic universe, the working hypothesis of our universe is that it's fear based, and they'll tell you, well, entropy says that you can't there's no energy system where you can put out more than you take in, that is in fact what love does. That's the amazing thing about love energy, is that you can actually put out more than you receive.
Yes, because you're connected to a greater source of energy than people know. It's the whole universal source. It's everywhere. That's the difference. It's not finite. It's not in a structure or a box. And this is what people say. You know, if you abolish the rule of law, it'll be the law of the jungle. And I say to that, well, the law of the jungle already exists because those in power have the control. Those ones are already controlling you. They're outside the law. They're the ones that are in control. So it is the law of the jungle. People inherently know what is good, because the rule breakers will break the rules anyway.
Well, this is definitely, maybe an overused term, but this is a paradigm shift. Yes. But certainly in these times where, there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of, fear getting spread around, given our, the pandemic. It is also, an opportunity. And I think there's people like you and Tim and Dr. Mossbridge and many others, actually, who are looking at this time as an opportunity to make a shift, to think differently and to do things differently. And the idea that we'll ever return to the old normal, whatever that is, I don't think we found the new normal yet, but I can't imagine that the world is going to be the same after this. And so it's an opportunity, I think, for humanity to take a different direction. And it seems like love is of the essence. I mean, if you had to boil it all down to the simplest possible sentence, it doesn't get any simpler than that, other than just saying love, but people will kind of look at you expecting you to say more.
Yeah, well, what we can do in this situation, and Tim and I agree that this is so ideal. People, and I'm seeing it happen more and more, people are saying, I'm just not coping with this, because their feelings are coming up. Their feelings are coming up to be dealt with, the ones they shut away from when they were children. So we're being separated so that we can sit with ourselves. We have to stop running from our fears. And when we stop running from our fears and sit with them, we can say, oh, this is me. This is how I feel. These are all the emotions running through me. Because when we know when we're in love or not, in love in the sense of satisfaction. It's all about how we feel. So if we're feeling negative, if we have a negative emotion, we know that we're not aligned with love right now. So that's the only question we really have to ask. How do I feel? How do I feel? How do I feel? How do I feel in every moment? And whatever that feeling is great. It doesn't matter. But when people have been in isolation now, they've still been trying to run from their fears, but they can't. They can't run from how they feel. So they have to sit with them. And it's been overwhelming for a lot of people. So we're hoping that people get the opportunity to just sit with, how do I feel, and accept, oh yeah, that anger or that sadness or whatever it is, just let it flow through. It's part of you. Own it. Bring it back to you. Then you'll be in love again. You'll be back to the place of satisfaction, because it has been all about the fears arise when we've created the rules that say, we'll go back to boys don't cry. So boys aren't allowed to be sad. They're not allowed to experience their sadness. So many men will be sitting in a place where they'll feel angry right now because they can't express their sadness. Probably what they need is a good cry and a good just sit with how I feel right now and accept this is me. I accept my sadness as part of my intuition, as part of who I am as this loving being. And when you can do that, it's just your energy settles. You're not running from, not trying to get the power from somebody else. You're not trying to get the good feeling from somebody else or something external to you anymore. You know that, oh, this is great. This is a part of me. And I'm home. I'm coming home.
Well, again, your work is really powerful. I know I participate in a practice known as mindful meditation, which is essentially guided meditation. And so we get some meditation along with some guidance, and I do that in community. And I think that's something, the social distancing doesn't mean social isolation. And I'm sure you have your circles of how you're reaching out to people and helping, your community or communities. I know that you have some research projects also on the Lawyers for Love site where you're really working to manifest, to test this idea in different ways. You've referenced inserting love is of the essence into legal documentation. To connect with other, you refer to them higher consciousness lawyers globally.
Yeah.
I think Tim has mentioned that you're part of a network of lawyers. So if there's lawyers listening to this, I imagine you're open to them contacting you. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
We've got quite a large network now that have connected in with Lawyers for Love, because there are a lot of lawyers out there now seeking an alternate platform, because that's what we're offering at Lawyers for Love, is an alternate platform. Many people have tried to restructure that know that the system is not working very well. They've tried to do some restructuring, and it's great whatever everybody's doing, but Tim and I just see it from a completely different place, is that love is outside of fear. So because the rule of law is fear-based, love can't exist in that space. But we can certainly help people start making those love-based decisions. And then when they're doing that and consciously thinking of love, it will shift. There will be a shift in how people approach their lives and making decisions for themselves. It's all about self and how we love ourselves and how we're making decisions for ourselves without fear that we're going to be, there's going to be some retribution. Because often, instead of, accepting that we're in this situation, we'll go and blame somebody else. So, but yes, to go back to your question, I'm doing programs with lawyers now. We're doing it remotely so that we're making home retreats for them and things like this to, just really sit with how they feel.
And
people don't do that.
Yeah. And they can reach you via the Lawyers for Love website. And your website again, what's the domain name?
Yeah, I just prefer to go through Lawyers for Love.
Lawyers for Love,
because
okay.
This project is moving, because the Zen Lawyer is, part of that identity where I was working in the space of bringing this project into being. So this is where we are now. Yeah.
Great. And obviously you connect, you and Tim connect through the Institute for Love and Time. And there's been a series already posted called the Hope Intervention Series, you know, a series of videos that include meditation and also some really great lectures and talks by Dr. Mossbridge. I think there's some people, when they hear this information, they say, well, that's really interesting and that's really out there, but right now I'm trying to figure out how to pay the rent and I'm trying to figure out how to survive. And, you know, the kind of thoughts that you're having, you know, they're really wonderful, but I'm, you know, dealing with this real world situation. And the Institute for Love and Time is actually developing an application to help people in low-income communities where this kind of information is not only relevant, but actually really valuable in terms of being able to not just survive the challenging situations of our environment and our economic situation and other forces in society, discrimination, et cetera, that this idea of hope and love is not just something for the lucky few. I mean, I consider myself among the lucky few in the sense that I've my work is online, and you know, this pandemic has barely been a bump in my road. But for many people, I know it's really hard. But I think this idea of love and hope during this time is even more valuable, and sort of, again, the old structures clearly are failing us at this point. And so,
yes, and it's beautiful too with the Institute of Love and Time bringing this application in, because we need something more grounded. And this is why people haven't really trusted love, I suppose. They think it's the hippies, and it's not. It's who we all are at our core essence. And we're bringing this into a grounded, real space that you can live daily in how you feel, and that there is hope.
Yes, well, I know there's more on your web, on the Lawyers for Love website, about the kind of three project areas that you're working on. There's no time to go into all those today, but I will point people to the website. And I'm preparing for the release of my book, as well as an art show called Radiate Perpetual Love. Love of the is of the essence is now in the book as one of the key reflections. And it's also a piece of art in my show. And so your work is infecting, I say infecting in the most positive way. It you know, a virus is essentially a program. It reprograms things. It reprograms cells and whole systems. And I think this clause has reprogrammed me in a really powerful way. So I'm already expressing that in my work. And I know that it's a really valuable, it's really valued by the Institute for Love and Time, this particular contribution and how it's pushing love into different domains of, you know, human thought and, you know, and changing the system. You know, when I was a hippie, and, you know, we talked about changing the system, man, you know, we got to change the system. And you're talking about a new platform, and that's what it is.
Yeah,
a new system.
That's it. Yeah, we can't really put a band-aid on what's there now. So we're just going over there to play, and you've got, everyone can come. We've got a new playground.
Well, it's delightful to talk to you. I think that we could clearly have more discussions, because I know this is a journey with you and Tim that's really just beginning, and it's already really exciting. So I can't wait to see and hear more about what you know, how things unfold.
Yeah, I love your art, Wolfram. I haven't seen the finished piece yet, but I'm so excited about it.
Well, I am too. It's like it's part of a series I call Utterances of the Heart. And what's interesting is when you take a sentence like love is of the essence, and you see it in one dimension on a piece of paper, flat on a piece of paper, it is interpreted sort of intellectually, and you read it in your particular language. But as you know, love is of the essence. I've tried actually translating it into different languages, and that in itself is an exercise worth its time, because you realize that not all cultures look at love or express love or talk about love in the same way. And then when you bring a sentence like that into three dimensions, because that's what I do with sentences, I make three-dimensional sentences, and then I add light to them, or I let the light out of them, depending on how you want to look at it.
Yeah.
But it begins to grow inside of you once you start working with that sentence, that clause, that language. It starts to grow inside of you, and so, like I said, it really has started to grow inside of me, and I really appreciate. It's a seed, you know. You've planted a seed, yeah. And you're planting the seed in different domains, and that's really powerful.
That's beautiful. I'm so excited about all that. And I think it's the same when we're putting just the sentence into documents, into these soulless documents, you're putting some soul into them. You're putting the light in. Yeah, it's absolutely, it's the same thing, but we're just doing it from a different perspective. So I absolutely love this.
Well, thank you. I want to thank you again for your time. And we'll share this as an audio recording. I know Dr. Mossbridge would like to have this on the Tilt website, and I'll make it available to you. Share however you like.
Right, it's beautiful.
And I hope it's valuable. I know it is for me, both from my perspective in the organizational world and also in the world of art, and in personally during this challenging time. It's just wonderful to see a project like this coming forward at such a critical time in our history.
Thanks so much, Wolfram. And I'm so excited about seeing your finished art. I'd like to share that as well, if I can.
Thank you, of course. And it will be, I have created a page on my artist website and have, of course, crediting you and Tim for your work and getting this, you know, planting this seed and the work that you're doing to carry it forward in the field of law as well as other areas. So thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Great to speak to you today.
Thank you. Same here. Take care.